Longtime fans of the show should be familiar with the lender formerly known as Sue Pullen, and I'm pleased to announce that she's back, fresh off a rebrand and ready to help as Sue Mackey. Sue is a certified mortgage advisor at Fairway Independent Mortgage, an equal housing lender who focuses on finding the right product for you and your needs. She has over 20 years of experience helping thousands of homeowners. Whether it's purchasing, refinancing, or even a reverse mortgage, Sue will help. Sue's licensed in 36 states now, so reach out and let Sue Mackey it happen for you. The best way to reach her is just give her a call at 520-977-7904 or in an email, spullen@fairwaymc.com. Fairway Independent Mortgage has an MLS number of 2289. Sue Mackey has an MLS number of 206048. That email again, spullen@fairwaymc.com. And that phone number is 520-977-7904. Shoot Sue an email and let her know she needs to update that address.
How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today's actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
Disclaimer time. This is where I tell everyone to lighten up. It's just a podcast. Trading is like that roller coaster at the amusement park. Thrilling, unpredictable, and potentially stomach churning. What works for one person might leave another clutching their hat in the wind. Our hosts and guests, they're awesome, knowledgeable, full of insights, but we're not financial advisors. So don't rush to make any investment decisions based solely on our banter. Always consult with a professional or do your own research. Plus, let's face it, we like to have fun, laugh, enjoy the trading ride together. It's all in the name of good podcasting fun. So remember, take it easy, don't bet the farm, and keep your seatbelts on at all times. Thank you for listening. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the China Shop, home of the Band of Traders podcast. I'm Kyle. I got Flary next to me, and we got a small army of traders eager to discuss their experiences in the Gelber breakout competition. Flary, you want to do the honors of introducing your new friends? And if anybody here wants to promote anything, now would be the time to do that.
You always put everybody on the spot for promoting.
So. I know, it's so much fun.
This is so funny. Obviously the Gelber contest just wrapped up a little bit ago, like Halloween, actually. And, it was a great contest, like 6 weeks. And, at the end of it, it was like really tight and there was a bunch of cool dynamics kind of going on with the, whatever you call it, like blind P&L leaderboard and, you know, just a cool sort of like game theory inside of like just regular hard trading. But anyways, I reached out to, some of the guys and just said, hey, does anybody want to come join us on the podcast? We do this thing, you know, semi-regularly. And, Kevin, who got runner up, right?
I was up there and then, was punting on the last day for a spot.
Fell and then a little bit. Brock, who, I think ended up in third, and then, Brian, who was up there for, the run in the very beginning, we all kind of had our shot. And I thought it would be kind of a cool mix of one, folks that were active in, we had a Slack channel throughout and, just people that seemed to be sharing some ideas and, you know, sort of engaging in, you know, consistent trading ideas and some of the game theory that was evolving as we got closer to the end and stuff like that. So, yeah, I appreciate you guys jumping on and everybody. Probably has some interesting stories to share along the 6 week journey. So there you have it.
All right. So where should we kind of kick this thing off then? Do you have some pre-planned questions that you want to ask some of these guys? Are there any like key things that you know happen that you want someone to tell?
No, I mean, I think it would be interesting to hear from everybody, like just what was their blanket experience in the contest? Like, what was your expectation coming into it? Like, what did you get out of it kind of thing? And maybe we just kind of go around and talk about like generally the experience. And then maybe we get into some of the interesting, moments. Like I know, Brian, you were like out of the gate super early, maybe chatting about that a little bit. And, you know, Brock, you and I were like guessing where each other were, like literally with 24 hours to go kind of thing. We were all kind of leapfrogging in the last week, Kevin, Brock, and myself too. So, yeah, I don't know. Maybe if you guys want to start by just sharing the general experience, expectations, and, you know, what you think you got out of it and what could potentially still be coming.
And we can go alphabetical. So, Brock, if you want to start.
I think overall, like, it was a net positive experience. Like, obviously, I'm still in talks, like, for full employment at Gilbert right now. So I'm biased in that regard. I came into this competition with the intention of getting a job. Like, I've been working as an engineer for, like, 3.5 years now. I was in grad school and then full-time job and, and I was working in a lab when I was in grad school. And I mean, like, I just kind of had this moment in my life leading up to it where I was like, this is for sure not what I want to be doing with the rest of my life. Also, like, quite frankly, I was getting really fucking underpaid and that pissed me off, you know? So
it's a good motivation.
I mean, I have a love for the markets just because, like, I don't know, that goes beyond like the need for money, in my opinion. Like, I just really love the game, but just the idea of being in a sense, being my own boss, right? Where I'm like, if I win or if I lose, barring some sort of unforeseen circumstances, like, that is totally up to me. You know, it's not up to my boss whether or not he's going to give me a pay raise or something like that. So anyway, all that to say, I saw Gilbert as an opportunity for me, this competition as an opportunity for me to, like, break into that. And I mean, it really couldn't have come at a better time in my life. I would say I was ready to try something new. And you know, I've been practicing trading, you know, losing money, gaining money, losing money mostly for, like 4 years now. So just to have this opportunity to really put my skills to the test, I think not only did it make me a better trader, but like in the end, it was a net positive for me because I have this job opportunity on the table now.
Dude, yeah, we're going to have to probably talk a little bit more about some of the things you guys learned, but I do want to hear from the other guys in the group. Brian, how was your experience? Anything that you want to add to that?
Yeah, I mean, I would say it's net positive. I think, you know, forcing yourself to write down like the weekly game plan and just articulate that as well as the daily trade review is just a good practice in general that I think is something I used to do a lot more of. And I quite frankly don't do it very often anymore. I know Flurry and I sometimes will do a little get together and kind of talk about setups and stuff after they happen, like during the day. But it is good just to go back and reflect. I think the hardest thing for me is trying to manage multiple accounts was pretty tough, especially when there's volatility. And like, I'll be honest, right? Like, I was just size chatting every trade. So, I think like, so like, I did really good in the beginning because I was trading 10 NQ, and then I started throwing on 20 ES at the same time. And like, I don't even know how to put on brackets, dude. So like, you know, at the end of the day, like, I'm just focused on my account first because that actually pays the bills. So I think that the times where I actually, you know, had the ability to focus on one and not the other, it was really good. But when I tried to do both at the same time, it was ugly. So
Put a pin in that, Flair, because I know you had some similar experiences and you even said some similar things about Teton, like reaching out to customer support, trying to figure out how to get a bracket put on.
For TT, but yeah.
TT, yeah, sorry, yeah.
Because like there was like 3 weeks where they just kept dipping overnight and like we have these automated levels and they would tick it and then they would rip it like 100 points on NQ every time. And I'm like, dude, I can't take advantage of this because I don't know how to put a stop like an OCO in properly. So
it's funny you say that because I did a stats review as like an exit interview. And one of the stats was then they were like, can you tell us about why 80% of your P&L came from the overnight session? And it was a lot to do with like what you just said is one, during that stretch, the overnight session was very trendy. So it was a big opportunity. And two, I'm trading my personal account, like, and I have a limited time to do that. So, you know, from 8:30 to like 10:30 is my window to make like my money. and the overnight session was trending. And so, you know, I would trade, like I would get up at like 2 and 3 in the morning and try to catch like the Euro Open and just like kind of do like overnight swing trades to see if I could build a P&L to like not necessarily have to watch a trade during during the cash session. So it was interesting, like it sort of like turned into my strategy, even though I didn't intend it to be. But like when they look at the stats, which they were great at, like giving you stats and stuff like that, which I think would be another good topic here. But 80% of my P&L came from overnight trades, or what they consider overnight. Like if I'm trading at 7 in the morning, a lot of it was like 7 a.m. or trading data, things like that. But like they consider that like overnight or whatever. But anyways.
So anything that was, yeah, anything that was not RTH.
Yeah, not cash session.
Kevin, what about you, man? How was your experience?
That was good, man. I work full time, so maybe a little more similar to Brock. I work full time in financial services, so I'll kind of leave it at that. But you know, I've always traded on my own. Have never had really anybody to discuss it with. So it's really been like a personal experience, and I've always like looked into what prop firms are out there, and you know, what's around, what's available, how could I pursue that full time. I was aware of Gelber, saw the opportunity pop up, and you know, I don't know if I had many expectations, to be honest. I just wanted to be able to show my skills to somebody, and we, you know, got into the competition, and I think in terms of what they provided, it was probably above and beyond of what I said. I didn't have expectations, but it was above and beyond, I guess, minimal expectations. You guys mentioned the stats reports. I mean, there was a daily and weekly stats report that came out. Got to learn a lot about, you know, a few things in my trading I didn't know about. You know, I track some of my own stats, so but they were provided a comprehensive report. We had the daily reviews, so you know, it was a cool experience. And you get a peek inside of what they're really up to, and how some of those guys think that sit on a desk, get paid and do that full time.
Speaking of the, you mentioned the way that the institutional like mindset is, you guys kind of got a sneak peek into that. What were some of the, like those key differences that you guys did notice? Like what were some of the ways that you guys thought like, that's different. That's not the way we do things in retail.
No market orders.
Yeah. No market orders.
Yeah. No market orders. I think, I don't think this is, this isn't like proprietary at all. I mean, and it can get cut if it needs to, but you know, we're all used to trading PAs where you have an account balance, right? You have to manage your account balance. You have to manage whatever your account balance is, $100,000, and you can't draw that $10,000 or $15,000 in a day. In the prop world, it's a bit different. We had our risk limits where there's a $20,000 stop a day. And then here are your lot sizes, your limits per market. And so that was eye opening. That was a little different to get used to where it's just fire away. You know, here are your sizes. You have $20,000 to use for the day. Go trade. Right. So, and if you lost $20,000 in a day, you didn't. Unless you
just walked away, right?
Yeah. And unless you blew through it, it wasn't really a ding against you.
Yeah.
You know, if you're down 18,000 in the day, all right, you know, pack it up, go home, you know, make your game plan, and then come back the next day ready to go in a fresh mindset. So it's like real quick turnaround of like, okay, go out and fire away, but, you know, make money too, right? Because you got to come back tomorrow and do the same thing on the same risk limits.
It's less about being a risk averse and more about making sure you're maximizing your risk.
It was a pure, like, can you take the opportunity when you see it experience without any, like, with the release of, like, what if I lose 20K and I can't put on a 10 lot tomorrow? Like, there was, and I actually mentioned this as, like, what, like, I agree. I think this was probably one of the bigger aha moments for me of the whole contest, short of, like, some of the little, like, cool, like, in, like, you know, peek behind the curtain kind of moments. But to have the opportunity to have, I always called it an infinite bankroll. So you know, again, like Kevin was saying, you could lose, our daily stop is 20K. So you could lose 20K, but you come back tomorrow and you have an infinite bankroll, right? So there was always a tomorrow. And, you know, I think I've mentioned this here before, like there's two kind of traders in the universe, ones that trade the open and ones that don't. And you never had a threat unless, of course, you're like actually on the desk and you get fired because you lost 20K like a million days in a row. But like you, in this contest, you knew that tomorrow you always had a fresh bankroll and that you could trade as many contracts up to the max that you wanted to, and that you could, you know, you just had to stop before the $20,000. And I mean, it's not like a great stat, but like one of the stats that I discussed with the team was I had 11 max losing days. And I still managed to be profitable through that. So what that really showed me is like, I've honestly never done that exercise in all the years that I've been, you know, focused on futures markets. I've never just like not had to worry about tomorrow's account balance and just traded to a number today. And when I hit that number or when I was done trading, I just, you know, kind of moved on to the next day. And that was like a really, I don't know if it was like reassuring or eye-opening, but like there was something about like the fact that like if you just consistently manage your max loss and you don't have these outsized days, and you know, outsized to infinity is pretty big, you know, at some juncture they would tell you that you can't lose 20K anymore, but like in this it was 6 weeks, so like you knew as long as you didn't blow past 20K tomorrow they would give you another opportunity to make as much money as you possibly could. And you know, to do that, to, you know, respect the 20K stop, which that was another thing. He was like, you know, you hit it 11 times, but you never went past it. And then, you know, still made money. It was pretty cool to kind of see like, okay, wow, that's interesting. Cause I've never really thought about my accounts and my balances in that way. I've always kind of thought about it, like Kevin, like you were saying, like some big number, like, man, I can't afford to lose 10K today because now tomorrow my account value is only this, and like I don't know if I should still be trading the same size. Mm-hmm. And every day was a pure reset. You could come in with a fresh like attitude, a fresh mentality, and then you could kind of like purely forget about tomorrow or yesterday and just focus on today. And it was I think really helpful as far as like the psyche went to like move forward and not really worry about it. Now the contest piece sort of added to that a little bit of like, well, shoot, I know where I'm at, but I don't know where I'm at, like P&L wise. So like, I feel like I have to push kind of thing. But as far as like the pressure to perform, it was like there was just one job, was take trades and don't lose more than 20K. And that was kind of a cool eye-opening thing for me as well. So I would agree with that.
And it's also eye-opening how easy it is to lose 20 grand when you're punting, you know, 30 lots. Super easy. Like for me, I wasn't using the DOM because, again, like I'm not, it's on another screen, right? Like I'm trading my account. And so I'm just hitting buy and sell, just marketing. And like when you're on 20 ES and you're marketing in, I mean, you can get slipped and you're down like $1,000 before you click the button. Like it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
That was an interesting piece of it too. Like, and I don't know what you guys, maybe we can talk about this. Like what was the contract size that you guys kind of like set out to do from a theory perspective, or just like, you know, a risk perspective, like what you set out to do for the contest. But I started out like relatively small, a max they would give you. And I segued into basically trading like, or trying to trade up to the max to get a cushion. And I certainly noticed that the bigger you traded, especially using market orders, the more it cost you to trade. Like I'm talking thousands of dollars over the course of the like last several weeks of trading like max size ES and NQ with slippage using the market button. So it was interesting from that perspective of like, man, if you didn't use limit orders, which limit orders were also a little bit scary in the TT system because their sim environment didn't always fill you if the markets were moving quicker. So the market was kind of like necessary, but yeah, you had, there was a price, I guess is a better way to say it. There was a VIG for trading bigger, and you really had to be really right. And you also had to stop out a little bit sooner because you couldn't guarantee that your limit order would get hit. And I really, really wanted to never disrespect that 20K stop. So,
yeah.
But
yeah, you know, my experience is like totally different from you guys's in terms of just the way that I looked at it and everything, you know, in terms of sizing and everything. So I have money in a prop shop right now. It's one of these places where you put up capital and they give you leverage. And it's the same, like when you go in and use the software, it's the same exact thing as TT and Gelber. Like you start off at zero and then it goes like, it doesn't reset every day. That's the only difference. But, you know, you have the same amount of leverage each day and everything like that. So you have to look at the actual like account value online on, you know, their website, you know, log in and everything so you can get, so you can track. So, I mean, it's similar in that sense, but so, yeah, I went in there and like, I'm a position trader. I almost never do scalps or day trades or anything like that. I did on Russell. I shorted the Russell the day the 50 pip rate decision came out, because that was just easy money in my opinion. And looking back also, I wish I had shorted like ES or NQ. I was focused on positioning those. So I went in there and I decided like, all right, I'm a position trader. I need to be able to hold stuff overnight, you know, and I need to not think about, you know, how much risk I have on that kind of stuff, gap risk, whatever. So I went in and I was like, all right, I'll take $20,000 and I'll divide it by some like percentage. And I decided 4%, you know, and I got $500,000. And I said, all right, my account size is 500,000. So every calculation I did for risk and contract size was based off of a $500,000 account. And it worked for me. But the other thing, though, is I'm tracking stats like Sortino ratio, Sharpe, gain to pain, like that kind of stuff. And like I actually had to talk to Dave Farino separately and ask him to come up with those calculations for me, because they weren't tracking an account size. And you need, you know, an account size in order to calculate those statistics. So I got mine, like my Sharpe and my Sortino were awesome, but I think they were definitely inflated because it wasn't, you know, using an actual like money account size. But yeah, so in terms of that, I went in and did what I usually do on my PAs, and I was like, all right, 50 bips risk. So I think my biggest trade was actually short yen. I was able to catch like the exact top, which was pretty sweet. And then I pyramided on. And I think the most I held was like 27 contracts, if I'm remembering correctly. But yeah, and I mean, it's funny because that's nothing compared to, you know, you guys are talking about like swinging like 20 contracts of ES or 30 contracts of NQ. So Right. That was my experience.
What was it like for you? Because I think one of the things that maybe the listeners might not know about is that even if you carried a trade into the following day that was maybe up, so like you mentioned like hitting the top of the yen trade. If that day, you close, like, let's just say a multiple $1,000 P&L, when the market reopened for Globex, you also had to still now respect a new $20,000, stop. And I think that was a big nuance to the contest that sort of hindered probably traders like you, Brock, from like really beating the bricks off of us, because if you could have like truly pyramided in and carried yesterday's P&L into today, we probably would have been in trouble on a couple of those trades that a guy like you, who's multi-day time frame, would have been able to do, given like you carrying yesterday's P&L, being able to add into today, getting like a multi-day trend. So did you have to make some adjustments to that, or like basically just hold off on size? Like what was your strategy there? Cause I'm sure it was an adjustment, right?
Yeah, it totally was. And it's funny cause it's just like the like world trading is, professional trading is in right now, you know, like, cause Gelber is not the only prop firm that does this like 20K per day stop loss. Like that's your only risk management control, right? Like, back in the old days, like, you know, when like Michael Marcus was trading, like they just had an account size and they could just add on as much as they wanted to. And like, that's what I'm used to. That's how I trade. So I had to look at my stats, like coming into this competition, and think to myself, what is the most that I will lose like on a regular day, unless there's some sort of black swan or something like that. And I just decided it had to be 4%. You know, if I was playing with a $500,000 account, you know, like in my regular account, I'm able to add on so much more size just because of like what you said, you know, I'm in the money, I'm safe. I can just, if I'm risking more by pyramiding on, I'm risking money that I've already made that the market has given
me. Right. So you basically missed out on like risk, what I would call risk-free trade opportunities because of the refresh of the 20K, which probably would have been detrimental to us like intraday day traders, given some of the runs that the market actually went on during that streak too, like the six weeks that we were trading.
Yeah, it was
crazy.
Like, I mean, I was talking to one of the guys, like one of the employees there, and I was like, there could not have been a better time for me to be trading in this competition, you know, in terms of like my style, like counter trend and everything. Any other time of the year, like I could have had, I would expect to make like, I don't know, a fraction of the trades I was able to get during this competition. And it was in a 6 week span. So I was so lucky. It was crazy.
Yeah. It was a very trendy market. And it's funny because the stats always said I was fading, and I think you and I probably consider some of those things like just pullbacks in trend, considering what we look at. But like they would always be like, "Yo, you faded today," and I'm like, "No, I didn't. I just bought the dip in a like larger prevailing trend, or sold the rip in, you know, a weekly trend or something like that." But yeah,
it's funny because that's the thing though. Like my style is I fade speculators. I look at the commitment of traders, you know, so it said it was, fading. So I'm really curious about, and yeah, that was like my big thing. My big stat that came up was fading. And I really want to know like, what are they calculating that based on?
Yeah. What time frame were they considering the trend? I asked them the same thing. I'm like, you must be looking at like 5 minutes because I mean, like I'm fading a 1 to 4 hour trend at resistance, and okay, the 1 hour is pushing up, but like the daily was a downtrend for a little bit or whatever. But
that's interesting too, because all my stats were fading. I think I all, you know, all my trades, it was like 90% of fading, which it's probably more like 60%, but to your point, it depends, right? I probably fall in between Flary, in between you and Brock on time frames, so you know, not as intraday, but, you know, it's kind of an intraday swing. So, I never did ask the question, but I was curious on that. I was like, well, how do you consider that? Because, you know, on an hourly or 4 hour, a daily chart, this thing's moving up, but on, you know, 15 minute, I'm buying the dips on this. So you call me a fader, I guess, you know, I always thought that was interesting. A lot of it was fading.
But. Yeah, but also interesting that they had a metric for it, right?
Yeah, it's obviously defined enough that they could tell you that you're doing it according to their definitions.
Yeah. And I guess to some extent, like I have a metric for it as far as like I have a systematic way to know whether the 1 hour trend is up, the 4 hour trend is down, so on and so forth, or if it's like all the way up, you know, daily, weekly, blah, blah, blah. But it was interesting because I'd be like, wow, look at me, I'm buying dips today. And they'd be like, yeah, you were fading all day. And I'm like, yeah, really? Like, we pulled back 100 points on the open and I bought the dip and I was long all day. Like, I don't think I was fading, but I think, you know, kind of Brock, to piggyback on what you were saying, like, so you, like, sort of a swing trader that maybe had to miss out on some opportunities to, like, really put on some, like, large size positions that you could have been in, like, what was like close to max size in the contest had P&L not reset every day or daily risk. And you could have been in like huge trades for multiple days that like, I would imagine we would have all gotten smoked pretty hard from a P&L perspective on some of the trades that you hit that I saw. So you had to make the adjustment, right? Like so you did it like rel and account balance and then kind of like, what's an imaginary black swan event so that I would never be in a trade that would have to get cut, even though I didn't want to cut it on any given, like, you know, 5 day ATR move or something, whatever metric you used. So you had to adjust like your pyramiding or your adding strategy. I also had to make some adjustments like throughout the contest. And my main adjustment was, you know, again, like, I just couldn't manage trading my accounts. Like you guys, I'm doing some consulting work and stuff right now too, in the culinary space and like working on some other business stuff. So like my focus was like 8:30 to 10:30 and I'm trading my accounts from then. And in the first 2 weeks, I was trying to go trade for trade and I wasn't sizing up like really like relatively moderate. And I was trying to copy trade like Dom next to Dom, like trade for trade, trading the same way. And I quickly found out that it was just like too taxing. It was not something that I thought was sustainable. And I saw it leaking into some of the decision fatigue leaking into my personal trading. And I just couldn't afford that. And I kind of had to make the adjustment to be like almost a little bit more positional, but like, Kevin, like you were saying, like intraday positional, like almost like take 1 to 2 like good shots a day and like give it some room to work. And if it didn't work today, take my lick and go home. And that was like a big adjustment for me, I would say like into week 3, where I said, okay, well, if I'm only going to be able to take like 1 to 2 shots a day, I either need to do that during RTH on good size and risk like somewhere between like $6,000 and $10,000 per trade, but target somewhere between like, you know, $10,000 and $20,000 P&L positive per trade. Or I need to look to see if there was some overnight opportunities, which again, like I think definitely bled into my stats being like 80% of my P&L came from some of the overnight trades. But I had the similar experience as you, Brock, where like I had some trades that I was in max size. Like I was in, I had a long into, was it Tesla earnings? No, it wasn't Tesla. It was something before Tesla. It might've been Microsoft or whatever came right before Tesla. I was long or, what's the, it's not Nvidia, but what's the other, microchip,
TSM or,
it's like tied
SCMI.
To
CMI.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. So they put out earnings like just before the market closed and I was long 10 NQ and 20 ES and it ripped 150 points. It was a $35,000 trade. I was in max ES and max NQ. And I remember thinking like, man, this is guaranteed to continue going up. Like this is going to be an overnight trend. But I can't even fade like a 15 to 20 point pullback in NQ and a 5 to 10 point pullback in ES, even though I'm up $35,000 in the trade. And I ended up like cutting that trade down to like a 2 lot and a 5 lot or something like that. Like I would always try to keep ES like double. And it was like one of those like kind of like you had to consider, it's like, man, this is an awesome trade and I would absolutely just keep adding to this, but I can't. So you almost have to just like take your daily, as an intraday trader, like you just couldn't really carry size through. And I got myself in a bunch of trouble actually carrying overnight trades. Like the way they carried P&L too, it closed at 3 o'clock. And if it like went down.
That was how it closed.
Yeah, so otherwise I'm central. So like if it closed at the bell and if it went down during sort of the settlement period, that counted against you. So like there was an opportunity to even start the next day at a deficit, even though you finished the previous day at like say plus 30K. And so it was like there was really some game theory like risk on carrying risk into the next day where like unless, like, again, Brock, like, to your point, unless you were really methodical about having a predetermined plan, like, and I caught myself in this, like, I would say it was a downfall of mine of, like, man, I don't have a good game plan on how I want to carry this trade to the next day. And, like, I ended up giving up P&L. Like, I would start the day down 5K because we would open up and, like, a trade that was up 30K was now down like 4.5K on the open. And I was like, shit, this sucks. And I puke it and start the day with 25% of my P&L gone. So,
right.
That's what I get for trying to be an intraday day trader. Swing
that's
trader.
Exactly why I cut every single trade and didn't carry.
Longtime fans of the show should be familiar with the lender formerly known as Sue Pullen. And I'm pleased to announce that she's back, fresh off a rebrand and ready to help as Sue Mackey. Sue is a certified mortgage advisor at Fairway Independent Mortgage, an equal housing lender who focuses on finding the right product for you and your needs. She has over 20 years of experience helping thousands of homeowners. Whether it's purchasing, refinancing, or even a reverse mortgage, Sue will help. Sue's licensed in 36 states now, so reach out and let Sue Mackey it happen for you. The best way to reach her is just give her a call at 520-977-7904 or in an email, spullen@fairwaymc.com. Fairway Independent Mortgage has an MLS number of 2289. Sue Mackey has an MLS number of 206048. That email again, spullen@fairwaymc.com. And that phone number is 520-977-7904. Shoot Sue an email and let her know she needs to update that address.
How do you feel when you switch to GEICO and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today is actually Friday. So yes, happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.
The sun's shining, birds are singing, and all feels right in the world.
Until the season changes, and suddenly you lose your motivation to get out of bed. In fact, 1 in 5 people experience some form of depression, no matter the season or time of year.
At the American Psychiatric Association Foundation, our vision is to build a mentally healthy nation for all, because we want you to live your best life and be your best you all year round.
Please visit mentallyhealthynation.org to learn more.
Flair, I was going to give you a shout out, Brock, on that too, because that's difficult to manage. Yeah, I mean, you got to be like all over your sizing on that. I had one in ES. I think it was like October 14th or 15th, whatever. ES. I'm looking on my chart right now. Trading around like 59.10. Similar deal to you, Flair. Like late in the day, our limit was 20. I think I had taken a 15 lot. Short, and I was like, this is like a setup for me. Like, this is a swing setup for, you know, risk. I think it was like risk 12 to 15 points to make like 60. I thought I could do quite well on it. In the way, the dynamic of how they marked the close versus like where the market then drifted to, they had like booked me on some P&L, but then by the time Globex opened, I'm looking at a P&L that's because they remark your entry. So where my entry was actually quite good, they marked, I was on side, they mark it back at that close, the 4 o'clock close, and then the market drifts back up overnight. I find myself, I think I was like $8,000 off sides. You know, I'm trying to eat dinner and I'm like, oh, come on, man. Like, I'm halfway to my stop for tomorrow. But I love this idea. I really want to be in it. And at that point, it was kind of just like, all right, you know, I threw a stop to where I knew it would be like, all right, that's 20K, I'm out. It never hit in the market. I did go way onside on that, but it was, it just didn't have that comfort to be like, all right, I'm going to.
Yeah, we didn't prepare.
I'm really onside here. I'm going to hold, I'm going to add.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, it made the dynamic a little tougher. So I was going to give, I was like, bro, yeah, sure. Good on you for being able to handle that every day. If you're holding positions every day,
did that help you guys, the guys that are more used to holding longer term and having like that P&L cushion to work with, did that change in the way they calculated everything? Did that help you guys like maybe in the long run, like trying to think of things in a different way or maybe forcing you to kind of take profit sooner? Or was it more of just a hindrance and an obstacle that you had to overcome?
I mean, it wasn't like necessarily like a huge hindrance. Like, it's just mm-hmm. like, I mean, look, I came into this competition saying like, I'm here to demonstrate my stats. I'm not necessarily here to make like as much money as possible. So that was my main goal. And it just happened to work out for me. But like, I mean, I do have experience like already, like I came into this with that prop shop that I was working at, you know, it's the same type of thing. Like, I have to make sure, cause they require like a mandatory stop out, right. You know, mm-hmm. at a certain profit level and, or loss level. So I would say when I was first doing that, like I first joined that place in early 23 or something like that. I think, you know, I come in and yeah, I had to deal with those emotional, like, you know, you're sitting there, you're trying to eat dinner, you know, be present with people, but like, you know, at any second you can get stopped out of a trade that will very easily, like, it might rebound, hit your level, and then just take off, right? You know, that's fucking stressful to think about. But anyway, so one of my like trading heroes is Paul Tudor Jones, right? And he talks about this like in his Market Wizards interview in the very first Market Wizards book. You know, he was talking with Eli Tullis, and Tullis is sitting there having a 45-minute conversation with clients, and he's just getting absolutely destroyed by the market, and he's like totally chill about it. You know, so for me, trading is not just like winning, right? There's other things too. If I want to be a good trader, I want to be able to emotionally handle that kind of stuff. You know, mm-hmm. So every day, like, it's a test for me. It's an endurance test to make sure that I'm not, like, even if I'm losing my shit in the market, I do not want to be losing my shit in real life. because that is just like, you know, you're dead, you know? So, I mean, and you can work your way around it, right? You know, I mean, there's some people who are like, yeah, the way they work around it is like, I'm only an intraday trader, you know, or I'm a scalper, you know? I just want to have a position on in a time frame that like makes sense to me, you know? And other people, like, they just choose to be masochists, I guess.
They don't want to be checking their news feed, looking for that Trump tape bomb to happen while they're eating dinner.
Yeah. But the one thing though, like real life example, I guess the only time that was really stressful for me was when the new PM was elected in Japan and he went in and he was like, yeah, I'm going to be super hawkish. I'm going to raise rates. Like I'm going to do all this stuff. We got to save the yen. The yen had like a huge jump that day. I don't remember what the actual numbers were, but I mean, you can look at the chart. And I was short the yen at that time, so it just immediately went against me, right? Mm-hmm. So that was one of those times where I was like, you know, I had to sit there and I had to calculate, like, I have a strategy. I have an edge that I follow. I have an entry and an exit process. This happening did not change my strategy. Like, this did not cause me to hit my stop loss. I just need to stay in and see what happens, you know, and I need to be willing to get back every single one of my profits that I make. You know, Peter Brandt talks about this too on Twitter. I don't know if you guys follow him or anything, but
I think I do. Yeah.
So, and he's always talking about giving profits back to the market. And, you know, I had to go in with that mindset of like, I might, you know, I could be up 30 grand, you know, which is substantial in that competition. You know, and I could just give it all back because the market could go against me.
Is it Joe? Somebody in our room helped me think about this in a different way, but he called it sometimes the markets demand a sacrifice from us.
They totally do.
It is on us where we have the choice of determining how much the market is going to take.
I mean, and look what happened in that trade, right? Like I just was accepting that, you know, it could just hit my stop and I was already up pretty substantially by that point. And cause I don't remember, I think I had like maybe 15 contracts of yen on at that point. So I was in a good profit because I hit like the exact top before, you know, that stuff came out and I could have just like gotten scared, gotten shaken out, you know, because that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to shake out weak shorts, but I didn't. And then it just went back down in my direction. That's why you have to be diligent and you have to be disciplined because sometimes, yeah, it will screw you over. But other times like that's the barrier to being a champion.
That's probably why you found your way to where you did in the competition and hearing the preparation and the systematic approach that you put to this contest put you in the place that you did towards the end. Because I know there was probably a lot of people that were trading relatively similar, like lower lot, you know, thinking about it potentially from like a, you know, 5-day ATR, like let's never risk, but we're going to carry multi-day positions, spread trading, whatever these guys were doing. But I saw a lot of people move in it. Like you would see multiple trend days, like 3-4 days in a row. And these guys would jump up and then we'd do this for like 3-4 days, like chop back and forth. And they just got chewed up.
Yeah.
But you know, again, like it sounds like you had like a really systematic approach to that where like, you're like, hey, listen, man, I bought the ticket. I'm taking the ride. I know that I've put on the correct amount given the research that I've done, for my stop and my theoretical account balance. So kudos to you for like building a strategy that was successful, not only given these markets, but like given the parameters of the contest, because I know there's probably a lot of people that were trying to hold multiple day positions that didn't do as well with a similar ish strategy, that probably had just as good of an opportunity to catch multiple day runners, and didn't realize some of that P&L or had to puke it, you know, and then watch it go the other way.
Yeah. So, and that sort of dovetails in with the other, so we were talking about strats earlier, stats. The, one of the things that they said to me in my interview was like, Brock, you traded 16 different markets. You know, you traded like the most markets out of anybody else who traded, you know, and I was like, yeah, my strategy is, you know, I look at positioning in each market. So, I mean, in that sense, it's kind of universal, but what I always try to do, and this is another thing that I picked up from Peter Brandt, is like I try to make sure that my downside loss is limited, and then I just like let the market dictate what happens with everything else. So as long as I'm making sure, and I never had a loss like on an individual market that exceeded $4,000 or something like that. So Yeah, so my distribution, the chart's actually cool. I wish I could show you guys, but it was like, it starts off like at the bottom where it showed my losses, right? They're pretty much capped at 4,000, but then there's this huge, like, you know, gain. So you have this like curve, right? Where you have this like tail that's just like really well controlled, right? So that was like, as long as I'm not making like a sine wave, right, with my P&L, like, then, you know, I know that eventually the market is going to reward me, you know, so it's just a matter of sticking that out and like taking the hits and kind of just like, sometimes you really just got to like sit there and white knuckle it.
So do you guys think that the market that we traded during this contest, do you think it favored intraday traders or do you think it favored, you know, multi-day swing traders? That obviously it favored multi-day, you know, smart swing traders, Brock, you've proven that. But like, do you think overall, like, you know, somebody coming in trying to, you know, push size intraday, catch big rotations, or do you think it probably favored a little bit more systematic multi-day approach, given like the 6 weeks that we had?
I mean, my opinion personally is like, I got really lucky in my time frame. I mean, it was just 6 weeks and like there were awesome trades. As far as like, you know, really short term time frame, I mean, I'm thinking about in terms of news events, the biggest thing that I think came out was probably the interest rate decision.
Right.
That was probably the biggest like P&L opportunity for anybody who was, you know, scalping and looking to fade that initial jump up.
Yeah, there wasn't more than like there was like, for me, there was like, you know, a couple of like 150 point moves, but they're like in NQ or speaking, but like there wasn't like any like insane, like, you know, super outsized 500, 600 point days where I had like, I don't think I ever really had the opportunity, short of the day I got stopped out two ticks from the low, you know, to have like, I win the contest in one day. But there was volatility. I will say that like for an intraday day trader, there was good enough rotations where if you were, you know, sort of being a little bit more methodical with risk, there was equal opportunities to lose a bunch of money, but there was opportunities to catch a lot of rotations. Like the volatility, like I would think it was like relatively even. There was just no big outsized one day, but I think that probably would have net neutralized. I think the difference would have been like you would have been probably carrying significantly less size on like, say, an intraday 500 point NQ move than I would have been, which may or may not have been a catalyst for, you know, end results of the contest. But yeah, I think it was kind of a cool market to trade during that 6 weeks. Like there was a good enough like two-way intraday volatility, but it was a very trendy, I would consider it a very trendy market during that time.
Yeah,
in multiple markets.
Larry, I know you're primarily ESNQ equity. Brock, where, if you don't mind me asking, what for your P&L contribution or attribution, I should say, what was your biggest market? Maybe not specific market, but was it FX or commodity or equity, fixed income?
It was FX and commodity. Okay. Because I actually put on gold long, which was a trend trade.
Yeah.
So what I do is my strategy is like pretty universal, but there are some markets where I adjust it just based off of my own personal preference. Like you can still fade some moves. So anyway, gold is one of the markets that I only take trend trades on. And that was my second biggest one. Yen was my biggest one. Then it was crude and RBOB. You know, those were my next two. So I mean,
Iran on the long side, Iran, Israel.
Yeah. And
yes, another huge advantage to a multi-market trader, like the Israeli, like that whole Mideast thing, like what an opportunity for somebody comfortable in multiple markets.
Yeah. So I had actually put on a crude long because my system told me to go long crude, like the Friday before all that shit went down. And like immediately there was a massive jump, you know? So, but I was like, this is perfect because this is what I'm trying to show to Gelber, that I have the opportunity to capitalize on these moves like before anybody knows what's happening because it's based on positioning. So,
Brian, what were you going to say?
I was curious what y'all's, I don't know how they calculate the max P&L opportunity, that stat they put out. Does anyone know?
Oh yeah, that was a cool stat. So my understanding of it was, I always called it the Piker stat. So like if you bought a 20 lot in ES at, you know, 5,900 and you were scaling out along the way, like every point, and then you carried like one of the 20 for like 20 points, it basically would have said like your best, your close, versus rel your open position. So like your flat to flat, if you wouldn't have scaled out in between, what would have been your P&L? So it's like, again, like kind of the Piker stat, right? Like I was in 20, but I, you know, had I held the 20 for the, you know, 40 point move, what would I have been able to make?
It's your what if stat.
Yeah. That's interesting, because for mine, it was always what my max profit was for that day. Like if I had sold like at the exact point where I had the highest, like that was what my, but I didn't scale in and out of positions or anything like that. So it's interesting you say
yeah,
that.
Yeah. So like we're like constantly in and out. So like that stat was brutal for me. Brian, I know you had one in Bitcoin late in the contest that was like enough to probably win the contest by like triple.
I think I had at least, I don't know, 6 days where it was 255,000.
Holy yeah. shit.
What was yeah. the winning total?
80 something, 84, 85.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah.
Yeah. And I realized if I stopped trading, like whenever I was in the lead, I would have finished second if I just didn't trade anymore, which is really sad.
So I think that's another good maybe roundtable of this and potentially like yeah. a, you know, last topic is what was your journey through the contest from a P&L perspective? You know, Brian, I know you were in the lead in the very beginning. I think at one point in the like first couple weeks we were 1-2. I had the lead like in week like 3 or 4 and had like a terrible follow-up week going for like one more day. We were all kind of jockeying, you know, Kevin Brock and myself for the lead, like going into it late. Like I had to set out, so we jumped on a, what they call it, huddle in Slack. We jumped on a huddle and I knew at the time I thought I needed to make 100K or more to win the contest. And it turned out, had I not pushed the day before, I was actually only like 20K out of the lead. And the day before, I actually thought I still thought I needed to make about 100K. So I was, Brock, you and I think we're sitting like roughly, let's call it 50-ish K, 55K, yep. somewhere between there. And we were kind of bouncing back and forth between third and fourth. And I thought, I at least for me, I thought the second and first place were 50 to 100K in front of us. It yeah. turned out they were only 20 to 25K in front of us. But at the same time, the day before that, there was actually somebody who was 100K at 100K, and they were worried we were closer. And so they yeah. pushed. They pushed, and it actually cost them the win because yeah. he was worried that we were so close to them that we would push, and if they didn't continue to trade, that we would leapfrog them. And it caused him to push, which he had a bad day, and he lost the contest. So there was a lot of like sort of that game theory. And I'll be honest, like I think I let being in the lead and not knowing where everyone was below me get the better of me. I had a moment where I was in the lead for a couple days. And I thought to myself, if I have one more really good day with what I think I was at like 115 or something like that. I thought if I have one more $20,000 to $30,000 day that I could basically just coast, take like a couple lot trade a day, like really almost like turn into like a positional like trader for the rest of the contest. And likely just like make a few thousand dollars a day or like on average, like with a 50% win rate and likely win. And I lost max that day. And then I lost max the next day and lost max the next day. And I went from first place to seventh and I fought my way back to third. And then we entered like another, you know, again, like Brock and I were kind of like lobbying. Kevin, you were in there and I was way wrong, which was interesting. So like I felt like I really needed to kind of like to, and listen, it's 2 days left in the competition. Like, I'll be honest, I completely altered my strategy from any version of like normal sort of like trading to like, all right, I have nothing to lose. Yeah, potentially I have a job opportunity to lose here, but like there's $20,000 and I think it's well within reach. And I was way wrong on how far out it was. And had I honestly just traded my normal strategy, I likely would have done much better. And again, like even my whole strategy. So like in my personal accounts during this contest, I had my best run of trading that I've ever had. And my personal accounts probably beat the winner by 2.5x. So, which is awesome. Like, yeah, but it's funny that like, I mean, it's funny that like, you know, like you let the other, or I let, I should say, because it sounds like Brock, you didn't. But I personally let the variable of the game kind of adjust my strategy. And I was super wrong about like where I thought I was. And how aggressive I had to be. So it'd be interesting to hear like how you guys approached, if any change, you know, into that last stretch. Or Brian, for you, like Brian, you had enough P&L in week one to win the contest. So like, I know you went through an emotional roller coaster, like dealing with like the downswing too. So, you know, maybe you want to talk about that. And then the other guys are like into the close of the contest.
Yeah, I mean, I know we were talking when it was happening multiple, for like almost a week in a row. I caught basically low a day multiple times on both ES and Q size, and I would go to put my stop in, and it would limit me out. So I was pushing it in wrong, and that happened. I mean, throughout the entire contest, I just couldn't get my head on right with that. I don't know why. I think maybe because being a Siri user, the buttons are reverse, and
oh, that would fuck me up.
Oh, dude, it was terrible. And I'd be like, oh, bro, I'm up this much. Like, I'm just going to let this coast another 100 points. I'm going to put my stop in. And then I'd be like, what the fuck just happened? And I would limit out every single time. And I'm just like, dude, this can't keep happening over and over and over. And I just, yeah, it was. So that, you know, gets you tilting and you just find C setups and just start punting because you're like, I want my, you know, $60,000 trade back. Yeah, and you know how that always ends is you get kicked in your nuts. So, and it happened at the end of the contest too. I was in 4 Bitcoin. I was like, all right, I'm just diamond handsing this to the end. And I had a pretty good entry. and it worked. The trade worked, but I did the same thing and I accidentally limited out. And I was just like, man, I made like 20K on the trade, but it ended up going like just 4x that easy.
How much did that cost you total? All the limit outs.
Oh, dude, over 6 figures, yeah. Probably.
I would say I probably punted 50K in misclicks easy in this contest. But I mean, everyone had the same advantage disadvantage of like time with TT. So I don't know that it's necessarily like I would imagine like people had similar experiences. But Brian, to the Bitcoin trade. So this is a funny story. There was another trader that I know, Brian knows, that was in the contest. His name's Peter. And he was also doing pretty well in the beginning and faded down. And he had nothing to lose, like nothing to lose. He had you know, kind of tailed off and it wasn't going super well. But he was within reach, given like we kind of knew where everybody roughly was. And this was at the time when I was in the lead going into it. And then like I knew where I was at in third place, blah, blah, blah. And it was the Friday before the last week. And I told Peter, I said, buy 4 Bitcoin into the Friday close because it's the best game theory optimal trade in the contest. Because if you buy it right before the close, they can't mark you down and you get the entire weekend of potentially an upswing on Bitcoin. And what's the worst that happens? Sunday it opens up, you're down 40K and you get dinged for missing, you know, a minus 20K day. For anybody that was in the bottom, you know, call it like 10 or something like that, it was an absolute free roll trade. And the fact that nobody identified it is insane. And Peter didn't take it. And had he taken it, Bitcoin opened up like $6,000. So it opened up like $3,000 up, which it's $5,000 a contract. So he would have been up roughly 60K on the open on Sunday, Globex Open. Jeez. It put in like 18 one-hour candles in a row without ever pulling back more than like $500. So he would have been like, literally it would have been like a $190,000 trade. He would have absolutely won the contest. All he had to do was put on a four lot Friday. So it's funny like how like one trade, and the Bitcoin offered that opportunity into it. So yeah, it's funny that you like, and Brian, I know you were in one of those trades, like where if you would have just not messed with it, you likely would have won the competition on one four lot Bitcoin trade, because it never pulled back. You know, more than like say $1,000 in that run.
It's so funny because I was looking to take that trade when we were talking about it, and I had blown my 20K stop that day. So I was going to do it.
I actually tried to click into it, and the system wouldn't let me for whatever reason. And you know, I purposely saved like a few hundred dollars, and I like with 1 second left on Friday tried to click into a four lot long in Bitcoin, and the system said, no, I'm not accepting the trade. So there was that. And then, but like, again, like talking about like last second stuff, the day before, the last day of the contest, the last training day of the contest, I had lost 20K before. So I'm at like positive $30,000. Brock, you were probably at positive 55 or 54 because you traded that last day, right?
So I mean, that was another thing too for me. Like at the end of the competition, I was only like, and dude, if I even had I not traded that day, I would have lost second by like, I don't know, hundreds of dollars, like three figures. Like, wow.
So you lost money on the last day?
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, the whole not knowing other people's P&Ls, that was a total mind fuck, right? Like,
yeah, it totally was, dude.
I mean, dude, I lost second by like thousands of dollars, like one like average day, right? Like I could have had, cause I think the guy who won second was like 57 and I was like 54. It's crazy to me. So one of the things that this competition pointed out to me was like there was like a lot of mental slippage, even in my strategy, even going in, like trying to white knuckle it as much as I did, right? Had I hung on to the trades that I was hanging on to till their completion, because I exited trades early, I would have been up like maybe like 90,000 or something like that. Like if I had executed each trade perfectly. And obviously there shoulda, coulda, woulda, right? You know, but that was one of the things that this competition like showed me personally, right, was like, what did you call it? You said I had like the gambler's mind, or no, the poker player's mindset. Because like, just the EV of my trades versus like what actually happened, like there was a huge gap, dude. I mean, I ended
your red line. Your red line was like, you gave us some hope because you didn't realize you're all in equity for sure.
Yeah, like I mean, it was. I think there was probably maybe like a 40K spread between like my EV and like what I actually made, you know? So that was like, I mean, those were like the two things for me that ended up, I don't like saying like cost me the win. Like, yeah, it was my fault, right? You know, like nothing outside of myself cost me a win, you know? At least in my case, like it was just like, I.
Feels like it cheated yourself a little bit, maybe.
Oh yeah, no, totally. I mean, but that's just trading, you know. That's like that's the psychological side of it, and that's one of the reasons I love the game. You know, it's just like you've learned these things about yourself. Like even when you think you're killing it, there's so much more that like you need to improve on if you want to just like get there. You know, if you want to be the absolute best. So,
Kevin, any thoughts on the game theory, the stuff that Kevin or Flair was asking about there? Do you have any experiences like that into the end of the competition?
I had experiences throughout the whole thing, man. I started out the first 2 weeks not so we had talked about the sizing aspect of it and the daily. I've never dealt with the daily stop model. I was trading it similar to how I would trade a personal account. You know, smaller size. Don't even want to come close to the $20,000 stop. Kind of just chugging along, had like a nice P&L after 2 weeks, had a few conversations on Slack after the end of 2 weeks, and the conversations were more or less along the lines of, like, use the daily stop. Like, we see your style, like, go for it. And I was like, all right, yeah, I'm in, baby. Like, let's use it. Started clipping way bigger size, all while my day job was probably getting a little busier, and immediately went, like, max stop, daily stop, daily stop, you know. And so I just see, like, you know, I was kind of like third, fourth, fifth in the leaderboard the first 2 weeks. I'm like, all right, I feel good. To, like, I'm not even on the leaderboard. Yeah. I'm like, all right, this is a disaster. But, you know, to Brock's point, it's like, get out of your own way. You know, I was taking trades that I didn't need to be taking. It was like, all right, just stick to your system, stick to your plan, take the trades that you see. You can still do them on the bigger size. And kind of had this, like, little regroup period in the middle of it where it was a straight V reversal of stop forcing it. I didn't care about the money or winning the competition. I was here to show my skills, try to earn a seat. And yeah, had a phenomenal, you know, made, you know, six figures plus in 2 weeks and was right back, you know, and whatever it was, fourth, fifth or sixth. And, didn't know where I was at the end. I could kind of get an idea that if I had another big day or two that I could place, you know, second or third. So I think even the second to last day, I didn't really push it, but the last day, we had that, was it Thursday? It was Thursday the 31st. We had a big trend day in the equities, up to the downside, really broke like a big balance area. But yeah, I was traveling that day and kind of just punted one and tried to buy a bunch of max contracts and was like, all right, I'm going to go to the airport and just like, yeah, I mean, that was probably the only day, you know, outside of taking some poor trades outside of my process, that was the only day where I really just punted one and was like, hey, you know.
I'm surprised that nobody went into the final day and just thinking, like, you know what, I'm going to sit on my hands and see if everybody else is going to lose their way into my place.
I was one day away. I was one day away from that in week four. Yeah. Honestly, so that was like, I had my strategy. I was one day away from that in week four, where I was just going to sit on my hands.
Yeah.
The guy who won second actually did exactly that because he said he had some sort of TT error and he was like in first and then he lost like 50 grand in a day or something like that. So he said he quit out of frustration until the end of the competition. And look what happened.
He just
you know, he ended up placing. Yeah. But I mean, yeah, that was actually my plan too, was just to sit on my hands. But like, I kind of got in my head after my conversation with Flurry like the night before. So,
oh,
I'm being honest.
Flurry's playing mind games.
I was on that.
I was two ticks away. So I got stopped out. I was in 10 NQ long and 20 ES, and I was just a little too early, a little too aggressive. I had two levels, and I just like didn't quite size it correctly where I could carry both contracts through to the second level, and it hit my ES level and stopped me out at like 19,500. It traded two ticks lower and ripped 60 points higher.
Mm-hmm.
And that trade, that would have been it. That was it.
Yeah.
And you know, again, like, it's funny that it comes down to two ticks, but like you said, Brock, like, you know, too, like, there were so many other variables in there. Like, it's at the end of the day, it's you, right? Like, I didn't have to be 20 as early as I was in 20, and I didn't have to be as like married to the idea of like, I need to make this P&L to win the competition. Like, had I just adopted the same strategy I was doing, like, you know, the first 3 weeks and not like tried to push, or been so worried about where people were in front of me, and more focused on my strategy, I likely would have had a significantly better result. But it was cool though to play through.
Yeah. You know, that's actually something too, if, because they're going to put on this competition next year. So if anybody's listening to this podcast, that is actually a great piece of advice. No matter what, you should just stick with your strategy because
absolutely,
you will 100% outperform. Like, you will do better if you just stick to your strategy, even if you think it's not working.
Yeah.
You know, because look what happened. The final results.
The top five switched probably way more than it should have, given game theory, than if everybody would have just done what they set out to do. 100%.
How many max days did you? How many max drawdown days did you take, Flary? And you still had a
11.
Pretty positive showing.
11. Yeah. So I had 11, and honestly, like the last 2 days, I'll just call, you know, like pure game theory, like just pushing obnoxiously. So I made $50,000 with 11 max. So at the time of the interview, when I heard those stats, I was up $55,000. So I was up $55,000, losing $220,000. So again, that tells you, you know, again, like this idea of like respecting your stop, like staying true to your process, whatever, and not tilting, because I lost $20,000 with the lead 4 days in a row because I tilted. And that's what lost the competition for me, is like the emotional tie to like being, I call it upstuck in the poker world. Like, you know, I was up a rack, and now I'm, you know, down $5 from a rack. And I just like, I'll play till the big blind. You always say like, oh, I'll just play one more rotation. I'll play till the big blind. And then, you know, it's like famous last words. You know, I'll just make 20K more.
It's my last hand. I'll go ahead and call this blind. Yeah. I'll call this. Yeah.
You know, again, like, in all honesty, like I fumbled the bag in that, like Brian, you kind of fumbled the bag in the beginning. And I think
totally fumbled the bag.
To people that are looking at potentially trading this competition or in the competition, listening to this, you know, in, you know, a year, be true to your process, set out to do something and be consistent, because worrying about where everybody else is an extra variable to trading that was not necessary. And it was kind of a cool dynamic to the game in a way, because it did sort of separate the wheat from the chaff of like who can avoid the pitfalls of what it was, and not stress. Because Brock, I guarantee you, you were like, I mean, you DM'd me in the morning, you're like, did you do it? Because I like, you knew I was capable of it, right? Like you knew there was a good chance you were gonna wake up in the morning and be like, yeah, I made 100K, and you're like, fuck. Now I, because you would have had to trade that day then, right? Like you would have had to push that day, and I would have told you because of the the conversations we were having. Like, yeah, I did. Like, I, you know, whatever. But you know, again, like, but the whole point is like, avoid it, right? Like in this thing, the best thing to do was to just focus on your process, which is sounds so dumb. And I feel like that's the like narrative of trading, is like, avoid all the dumb shit, avoid P&L targets, avoid this, that, and the other, and just trade your system. Yeah. And those that just traded their system, we saw did very well. And those that traded their system and mixed in a little bit of GTO, did okay. And those that just like got caught up in the tilt and like the what ifs and like, where am I? You know, probably dealt with more emotional baggage than they needed to. And, you know, at the end of the day, there was a lot at risk. There was a desk job. There was $20,000. And to be able to kind of put that aside, I think was, in hindsight, in reflection, was just as much a test as the P&L and the trading and the stats and all the things that we do. And again, in transparency, I probably failed that test. You know, and it's a learning opportunity. I think that's what the cool thing of the contest was, is and I told the guys this, like, I came out a better trader for sure. I had never had a better run in my personal trading than that. And it was 100% because of the mindset that like, I really wanted to do well in this contest. And it's funny that I never really like spent that much attention in my own personal trading to like being so diligent to like it's almost like you had to turn in a report card every day, right? Like you did.
Yeah.
And you know, when you're the one grading your report card, it seems a little bit different than when you're turning it into Chris or you're turning it into, you know, whatever, like whatever pod you were in. So, you know, again, there was a lot of cool things that I came out of it with. There was some fun game theory things. But at the end of the day, like if they run this again, it's a great opportunity. put in a good application, like take the shot. I hope you guys get a good opportunity to sit at this desk. And I hope, you know, we can maybe do a recap if they let you later of like what the life looks like, you know, kind of moving forward. I wish you guys nothing but the best in this too.
I want to throw out too. I mean, first of all, thank you everybody for coming in here and just kind of sharing some of the lessons that you guys learned from this amazing experience. Like I'm looking forward to trying to put an application in next time this thing pops up, and I'm definitely going to re-listen to this episode before that thing starts. But I do want to say we record every Friday, 9 o'clock Central. If any of you guys ever want to jump in and just shoot the shit with us, you guys are more than welcome. Just shoot me or Flary a note. We'll get you a link and get you set up. But I do think we probably siphoned enough of your guys' time for the day. Thank you, Flary, for introducing us to some new friends here. So anybody who's not trying to be anonymous, show them some love and click on their links in the show notes. Visit bandittraderspodcast.com where you can check out our back catalog and stay up to date on your whiskey fix by following the boys at Rare Barrel. Be back soon with another exciting episode, hopefully less divisive than the 24 election. But until that day, like, share, subscribe, all the things, and have a green week.
How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today is actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
This podcast is intended for informational and educational purposes only, does not constitute financial or investment advice, and should not be construed as such. The hosts, guests, and contributors of this podcast are not licensed financial advisors, brokers, or professionals. Any trading or investment decisions made based on the content of this podcast are solely at the listener's discretion and risk. Trading and investing in financial markets carry inherent risks, and past performance is not indicative of future results. Listeners should conduct their own research and seek advice from qualified financial professionals before making any financial decisions. The views, opinions, and information shared in this podcast are those of the individual contributors and do not necessarily reflect the views or policies of the podcast creators or associated organizations.
Produced by China Shop Productions.